Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us through WCTCAM or RestaurantGuysRadio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis, how are you?
I'm just stranded this morning. It's good to be here.
It is good to be here. You know what I want to talk to you about today?
I'm all Twitter. What was I talking about?
Well, we're gonna talk later in the show. We're gonna talk to Leslie Townsend about the Manhattan Cocktail Classic. But one of the things I want to talk to you about, and you and I had the good fortune to go out to a bunch of places over the last few weeks, and have food in cocktail bars. And I think that something's happening in cocktail bars, because when this whole cocktail bar craze started about 10 years ago, really, almost none of the cocktail bars had anything other than what you would call a bar snack.
I think we have to stop calling it a craze. It is the cocktail revolution. It's the new paradigm.
It is a revolution.
It's the new paradigm of the cocktail. I agree.
It is. But when this whole revolution started, it started with these little kind of hole-in-the-wall places that really, if they served food, it was totally an afterthought. And now that's changing a little bit. You're seeing some cool places now start to adapt to have chefs who are watching their kitchen, to make this a more serious part of what they do. Obviously, the cocktail is still the focus in these cocktail bars. But there's an understanding that, you know what, if the food's good, people won't have to get up and leave to have something to eat. People will be able to stay a little longer. People will be able to make a more complete evening out of it.
Well, I also think, you know, we're speaking specifically of New York in our experience in the last couple of weeks, but all around the country we've seen it. I think cocktails is a part of your evening. It's an integrated part of your evening. You have better food in cocktail places, and you have better cocktails in restaurants. I think those two things are really coming together. People are now expecting quality in everything they eat and drink, and I think it's something to be celebrated.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It seems to me these two cultures are kind of moving towards each other. Towards each other.
It's very difficult. I'm glad that you persevered right through
that. I speak for a living, so here I am. But they're moving towards each other. You'll see, you know, Danny Meyer at 11 Madison Park. He's got a really serious cocktail program. Del Posto serves a few, they don't serve a lot of them, but a few very serious cocktails that they take seriously that are real cocktails. And now what you see is, you know, we were at Death & Company the other night, and I'll tell you, I've eaten at Death & Company over the years several times, you know, usually just something to tide you over before you go to the next cocktail bar. And we had a couple of dishes there, and I was like, wow, these are really delicious.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, obviously, in a cocktail bar, you often have a constraint as far as a kitchen. You don't have a $100,000 Saint-Bonnet range in the back.
Sure.
And so, but that doesn't mean you can't make great food. And I think that's what people are realizing more and more in everywhere we go. One of the things I can't understand is why airlines don't serve great food to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because what they do is they choose food poorly for the constraints of what they have. And so people want a hot meal. Do you really want a hot meal if it's a microwaved synthetic crock of garbage in a, you know, blandly, that's or something that's been kept warm for hours,
right, don't
before
hold back.
The plane took off? That's when that thing got cooked. What the hell is wrong with you?
Understanding, right, that there's a constraint there.
I mean, but you're literally, you're flying on a plane out of Newark Airport. Call Fiore's deli in Hoboken and have them make 500 roast beef sandwiches. Please, please give me a Fiore's roast beef sandwich over the gray chicken in the microwave thing. I don't get it. But I'm just saying, to your point, people are realizing the constraints of the kitchen they have and then deciding what great food they can turn out.
You know, when Francis and I opened our restaurants, we were in a little theater district in downtown New Brunswick, and a lot of our business came from theater. And what we realized early on was there were constraints. Pre-theater, there were some things we could not do pre-theater.
Well, we could not do without cooking them well in advance, and they were things that didn't hold well.
Without compromises.
Right.
There were dishes that we couldn't make without compromises. So what we did is we found dishes we could make without compromises that were equally as good and integrated those into our pre-theater
right.
menu. And then those other dishes we might serve after 8 o'clock after the theater crowd had left. And I think when you talk about airlines not recognizing their constraints, I totally don't understand it. You know, in most cases, I would rather have a can of Progresso soup than what I get on an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Or like you said, a roast beef sandwich. I never understood why you're trying to serve me, you know, mush meal.
I don't get it.
But anyway, but what we've seen is that these cocktail bars are recognizing their constraints. And, you know, like I said, we were a Death & Company. It was very simple. We had a tuna tartare dish. But you know what? The tuna was fresh, delicious. The dish was tasty. The dressing that the tartare was done was very tasty. We had some pulled pork sandwiches. Pulled pork stays very well, so it keeps for a long time. And it is a dish that can be executed in a very small kitchen. And I thought, well, how smart is this? A, it's the type of food you want to eat when you're having cocktails. And B, it can be executed in small confines.
Well, and I think this also points to something that's really happening. We talk about bartending and mixologists being respected professionals now. As chefs weren't particularly well respected in this country in the 1970s, and now they are. And that's a noble profession. It is a respectable profession. I think the bar chef, mixologist, bartender now as well is seen as a professional. And you see, our friends in this business and people that we know in this business who aren't our friends, who run some of the top cocktail places in New York and Los Angeles and Chicago and San Francisco, these are people who are really great at what they do. They create great flavor combinations. And they know a lot about food because the line between the kitchen and the bar is really blurring quite a bit. And so how could you have someone who would take the great pains to, you know, make your whatever sour-based drink with a raw egg white and maybe make their own tincture or infuse their bourbon with bacon and take months to make you a drink perfectly, say, oh, yeah, and with that, here's an Oscar Mayer hot dog, you know. Look at Jim Meehan, best mm-hmm. bar in the world, PDT. They're in Criff Dogs, which is they're sort of hidden behind Criff Dogs, a dog joint in Manhattan. Well, you can get Criff Dogs there, and they're awesome,
right?
You know, so I think
well, of course, they're Criff Dogs designed by Wally Dufresne and David Chang, and
right.
You know, they're pretty serious hot dogs.
But I guess what we're saying is we all care more about what we eat, and bartenders are caring more about what goes in your cocktails and staying seasonal, local, just like chefs are. And I think that's great.
And then there's even the places in the middle, and obviously PDT and Death & Company. Their focus is the cocktail, but there's even places in between a place that was formerly Bar Milano, that's now Enoteca, is kind of that amalgam of both things. It's a restaurant, it's a cocktail bar, it's both of those things happening in the same venue. And I think more and more you're seeing people realize that, you know, maybe I'll have a less formal restaurant together with my really cool cocktail bar, and I'll be able to create that phenomenon in both ways. I'll be able to attack that from both sides.
There's no reason if you don't accept mediocrity in your drink, you shouldn't accept it in your food, and vice versa. So I think it's a great development, and it's something that we believed in from the beginning. Anyway, we'll be back in just a moment with Leslie Townsend. We're going to be talking about the Manhattan Cocktail Classic, which is an event coming up at the end of May. You need to check it out, and she'll be here in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and on RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And today, we are joined by Leslie Townsend. And Leslie is the founder, chairman, grand poobah, and president of the Manhattan Cocktail Classic, which is coming up here in New York City. It's a cocktail festival over 4 days in the month of May, and you need to learn more about it, and that's why she's here.
Leslie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
So, Leslie, I remember we did a little fall preview of this in the autumn, and we covered it on the show. But just in case anybody missed that, why don't you explain to people what the Manhattan Cocktail Classic is all about?
Sure thing. So the Manhattan Cocktail Classic is New York City's first multi-day festival celebrating the art and craft of the cocktail. New York City obviously has one of the greatest densities of talent in the world, really, as far as cocktails and mixology. And so it's only fitting that we have our own proper festival to celebrate that talent.
Hear, hear.
So we did a two-day preview just to get more enthusiasm behind it back in the fall, which was a lot of fun. And now we're gearing up for the first annual festival this May 14th to 18th.
Well, we had a great time, Mark and I, at the preview event. We went to, as so many of the folks who've been on the show or are on your advisory board and helped to put the preview event together. And you were kind enough to talk with me and Mark before the event. It was a great time. It was very educational. And the gala was a lot of fun. And I'll be honest with you. I drank a little too much.
I think we all did.
Leslie, you set up the May 14th through the May 18th. You set up the gala to be the Friday night, the first night of this event. Aren't you worried about Saturday morning? Because I am now.
Well, I mean, I'm not scheduling anything to happen too early on Saturday. You know, the first thing people are going to need or want to roll in for starts at 11:30. Although an 11th hour decision was made that we're going to have a Bloody Mary bar and breakfast being served at the official bar every day. So hopefully that will motivate people to get out of bed and make it to the seminars.
Well, I think we need to go back to the beginning for those who haven't attended a cocktail conference. I mean, this isn't like, you know, we're just going to take over the streets of Manhattan and be handing out cocktails, although maybe that's an idea for next year.
Well,
what exactly is the cocktail conference and gala and celebration? How are you doing this? 4 days. What happens in those 4 days?
All right. So it really is a combination of a lot of different things. I think our little tagline on the promotional materials says FET Festival Conference Cocktail Party, and that really does encapsulate what all we're doing. The activities really do run the gamut from purely educational to purely hedonistic and everywhere in between. So over the course of the four and a half days, I suppose, we're going to have educational seminars dealing with all things spirits and cocktail related. We're going to have lunches and brunches and dinners, all focused on cocktail pairings. We're going to have some fabulous straight-up cocktail parties on a boat, on a rooftop art gallery, just about any great location in New York you can think of. And then, of course, the biggest event of the whole festival is the Friday night gala that's taking place once again at the landmark New York Public Library. I have to say, that's where we held it at the preview, and there just is no cooler place in New York City to have a cocktail party. It's such a spectacular building. And frankly, it's one of the few places in New York City that's big enough to hold all the people that want to come to it this year.
How many people is that, Leslie? How many people do you expect at the gala?
Well, the legal capacity of the New York Public Library is 2,500 people. So according to any legal documentation, there will only be 2,500 people.
We understand. and for those, we're not that thick. We understand.
Yeah.
You're on the radio.
Leslie, you know, you were saying that some of the seminars are going to be part hedonistic, some are going to be part educational. Francis and I will be giving a seminar, and I think it could be best described as heeducational.
Yeah, we're just for our listeners out there. If you want to check this out, Mark and I really do believe in this thing, and Leslie's invited us to come and give a conference, a seminar there ourselves. So if you want to come and meet the restaurant guys, and you should attend all the other seminars with like Dale Groff and Audrey Saunders and Sasha Petrasky and Jimmy and all the crazy guys that are going to be there, you can check out our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Right next to this show, we'll give you a link to the Manhattan Cocktail Classic. You can sign up. Now, people can sign up for individual educational seminars. They can sign up for a whole package. What can people do when they want to come to this thing?
So I am doing this. I'm doing a lot of things a little bit differently. But the idea is, you know, not everyone can afford to buy sort of these all-access passes the way a lot of festivals work. I know South by Southwest just happened, which is so amazing. But that's where you have to, you know, pony up a lot of cash and then you go to a lot of things. And not everyone can do it. You know, it's a tight economy. I'm tightening my belt. So I've structured it such that every event is individually ticketed. So you can really choose if you just want to go to one thing or two things or 10 done things, it's all on an individual basis. So there's no minimum, there's no maximum, except whatever your liver can tolerate.
Huh.
And what I think is a really cool thing is that every single event is being ticketed at the same price, which is $50 a ticket. And that's regardless of whether it's a cocktail pairing dinner at some crazy 3-star restaurant or an educational seminar like the fabulous one that you guys are doing, or, you know, it could be a boat tour around the New York City Harbor. They're all going to be the same price. So hopefully this is going to open the doors for people to be able to attend things that they normally wouldn't be able to attend because they're cost prohibitive.
Well, plus you have so many people in such close proximity to New York City. I mean, within an hour, even 2 hours, you have just a tremendous amount of people who might be able to come in for a day and do 2 or 3 seminars
rather than
commit necessarily to the 4 days.
Right.
Well, you know, a cocktail conference that we attend, and I think I've seen you at as well, is the Tales of the Cocktail down in New Orleans. Now,
right.
If I fly to New Orleans to attend a cocktail seminar, as I do, I'm not going to a couple of events. But like you said, Mark, there are lots of people around here who are living in New York or living in the greater New York area or even from Boston who might just come down and do a couple of events one day and pop home. But I think you're also going to get people from abroad. I mean, we have a big listenership in Chicago, and some folks have expressed interest in coming in emails to us from Chicago.
Los Angeles.
So where do you think the consumers are going to come for this event, and who's coming? Is it mostly bartenders? Is it mostly professionals? Are you getting people from abroad and from across the country? Who's coming to this thing?
I'm not sure. It's the first time we've done it. This is definitely a consumer-oriented festival, much more so than Tales of the Cocktail, which is and will always be, you know, the preeminent industry event. This really is more geared towards consumers, much more on along the lines of something like the New York Food and Wine Festival. Most of the events are geared toward that. Of course, there are things that are more geared towards professionals, more sort of cocktail workshop type events, but those are definitely in the minority percentage. And in terms of who's coming, again, I really don't know. But you touched on a really good point, which is the fact that putting on any sort of festival like this in New York City as opposed to really anywhere else in the country is just a very different ballgame. You know, people who live in New York, we're spoiled. There are great things happening all the time. I think it sort of ups the bar in terms of what we need to deliver. Pun intended.
If the pre-conference is any indicator at all, I think, you know, I sat next to a writer from Bon Appetit magazine at one event. I sat next to some of the great bartenders in the world at another event. I sat next to people who hang out at my bar at another event. So, you know, it was a real cross-section of everybody in the same room, from writers to reporters to bartenders to restaurant owners to just people who like to hang out and drink great cocktails. And I thought that was really interesting, one of the great things about it.
Yeah. Well, I think one of my goals, at least personally with this festival, is that I think we really want to be expanding the audience of people who would self-identify as cocktail enthusiasts. You know, if you go to these top cocktail bars in New York City and beyond, it's frequently the same group of people who are attending these bars on a regular basis. And the goal, for me at least, is to widen that audience and to get people coming to events who wouldn't normally shell out $50 to go to a cocktail event, but maybe they would shell out $50 to go to something that's about photography. And so as such, we have an event that's geared towards cocktail photography. And similarly with, you know, with art and with music and, you know, fashion and food, all of these things, we really want to, you know, broaden the scope of who we're appealing to with this festival.
Well, let's break it down really quickly. We're going to have to take a break in a moment, but I want to give people who haven't been to one of these things an idea of the kind of things that you can experience when you go. Our seminar is going to be on something that we do, I think, pretty well. I think we're some of the leaders in the country for doing this behind the bar. We put up a lot of local fruit in the summertime, and then we use that throughout the year to make cocktails. So we'll put up cherries and applejack, and we'll put up strawberries and vodka, and we'll put up nectarines and Cointreau, and then we'll use those ingredients in both the bar and the kitchen throughout the year. And so we're going to have some food to hand out, we're going to have some cocktails to hand out, we're going to teach people how to make it. It's going to be a fun little couple hours with the restaurant guys. We're going to make some jokes. jokes. We don't know if they'll be funny. We'll see how that works out. but we have lots of seminars along those lines given by some of the best folks in the cocktail world. But there are other events besides just sort of educational seminars. And by the way, there's almost always eating and drinking at the seminars, so you won't be hungry or thirsty. But what other kind of events? You're doing events at bars, you're doing tales. Talk about what's going on.
Sure. So these educational seminars, like the one that you're doing, are taking place at Astor Center, which is really the home base of the festival. It's centrally located. It's a great facility for food and wine education. Then, in addition, we're doing a lot of events at actual cocktail bars. You know, at least I'm not sure. I would say 16 to 20 different cocktail bars are participating and hosting events, which again. Some of them are educational seminars focused on, you know, the history of gin or the history of, you know, distillation. Some of them are much more sort of cocktail party-esque in nature. We're doing some things at restaurants, you know, focused on food and cocktail pairings. A lot of things focusing on agave spirits, tequila and mezcal, teaming up with some local Mexican restaurants. Then some other sort of, you know, some very high-end cocktail and food pairing things as well. Again, at some really, really terrific restaurants. And then we have some of these are still in the works, so I'm hesitant to promote them too much. But hopefully there's going to be a boat cruise happening on one of the evenings at sunset going around the harbor. There are a couple things happening on rooftops that are going to be pretty fantastic. A few things happening in art galleries. And then, of course, the New York Public Library on Friday night, which is kicking off the whole thing.
I want to focus on two things. One is that that gala event promises to be the cocktail party of the year. The last one I went to, I walked into the New York Public Library and behind one bar was Dale DeGroff mixing up cocktails. Behind another bar was Audrey Saunders mixing up cocktails. Behind another bar were the guys from Death & Company. Behind another bar, and I thought, I've died and gone to cocktail heaven. It's all here, and it's all the best cocktail bars in New York and some other cities were all in one room. It was really a lot of fun, so I look forward to that. But I think one of the things that's really even more interesting than just a fabulous party is these little events that you're doing at bars throughout Manhattan. I have a partial list here that of people that may or may not be on here. Apothecary, Brandy Library, Clover Club in Brooklyn, Death & Company, Dutch Kills, Employees Only, Flatiron Lounge, Little Branch, Macau Trading Company, Mayuhuel, Pegu Club, PDT. These are bars that are sometimes maybe hard to get into, and they're very small. And I know one of the things that you're talking about we've talked about a lot is limiting the size of the group that can, the size of the place makes it a self-limiting group. So
yeah.
It's a small group. If you sign up for one of these things in one of these bars, you're going to be often, I think, with the owner or the head bartender from the place and a very small group of people for a really intimate experience. I think that's unprecedented.
Yeah, that series, we're calling it loosely Stories from Behind the Bar. We did a handful of those during the preview, just as an experiment. I thought, hey, wouldn't it be neat to let people go into some of these bars sort of during the day with the lights on, as it were, and get to meet, you know, the head bartenders and the owners, you know, Audrey Saunders and Julie Reiner and Jim Meehan, and just get to have sort of a very up close and personal session with them. And, I had no idea how popular these were going to be. I mean, one former coworker of mine, actually, who works in the spirits industry, came up to me afterwards. She had gone to the one at Pegu Club and said that Audrey Saunders had changed her life. said she was so completely, it was such a powerful and moving experience for her. So needless to say, I thought, all right, well, I need to do these again. And yeah, exactly. To be able to just sit down, you know, with 10 other people and really get to know the stories behind, you know, these bars and, you know, how they opened, what the concept was, all the struggles they went through to get it open, as most bar owners have dealt with in New York City. I think it's really fascinating.
I think you're going to offer some crazy insights into what goes into this cocktail renaissance. But we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment with Leslie Townsend of the Manhattan Cocktail Classic. You can find out more about it at our website, restaurantguysradio.com. There'll be a link right up next to this show. You can also go to manhattancocktailclassic.com, and we do hope that you come to our seminar at the very least and check out some other stuff while you're there. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and restaurantguysradio.com.
Hi, This is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Hello there, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, and we're talking today with Leslie Townsend. She is the founder and director of the Manhattan Cocktail Classic coming up this May, May 14th through the 18th in New York City. You should check it out, and you can find out more about it if you go to ManhattanCocktailClassic.com. And you should listen for just a couple more minutes because, Leslie, I think one of the things that is very interesting about how you produced this conference or classic or gala or whatever we want to call it is how you came up with the ideas and how you're open to ideas for the future. It's kind of a crowdsourcing method you use.
Crowdsourcing, that's the right word for it. Well, the basic idea here, you know, sort of taking a page from the Google approach to life is that, you know, the sum of ideas from everyone, it's always going to be better than, you know, the best idea from one person. And, you know, I make no claims of being, you know, the be-all and end-all of cocktail event planning in the world. So my approach to this festival was really to open up the doors and let, truthfully, anyone who had a creative idea, a concept for an event, come to the table and make it happen. And so, you know, that was the case with the seminars, that's the case with all of the offsite events that are happening. Really, it's just about creativity and motivation to make it happen. And so as a result, we have this incredible diversity and breadth of types of events that are part of the festival. And the great thing is that that's just going to keep growing and growing from year to year as more and more people get excited and they see what other people are putting together and they say, well, hey, I could do that. You know, I have a great concept and I want to see that happen. And, you know, my answer to everyone is, fantastic. So I want to see that happen too.
How do people submit ideas to you for things that they would like to do maybe going forward? Maybe there are great bartenders out there listening right now with a fabulous idea for what to present in 2011 Manhattan Cocktail Classic. How do they get in touch with you? How do they submit that idea?
They can just email me. I mean, my email is up on the website. It's leslie@ManhattanCocktailClassic.com. You know, I really am open to any good idea. You know, I was on the phone at 11 o'clock last night with a bartender from L.A. who had this incredible idea for, you know, a way that we could get more of the West Coast bartenders involved and highlighted.
So what's the idea?
I can't reveal too much just yet because I'm not 100% sure that it's that we're going to be able to pull it off. But, you know, it's not all just about making money. It's about making a really great festival. And, you know, a good idea is a good idea. And, you know, I can't come up with all of them.
Leslie, this model obviously brings in a lot of really great ideas, but I'm sure it's brought in some really crazy ones too. Are there any just off the wall? No, we're not going to have a seminar on cocktails for dogs. You know, is there...
Hey, wait a second. Hold on.
Honestly and shockingly, no. No one has come up with a bad idea.
Next year we're doing cocktails for dogs.
Yeah, I was going to say,
there it is.
That's unfortunate because that's unfortunate, Leslie, because that makes for great radio. Bad ideas make for great radio.
I know, I'm sorry. It's like the, you know, the loser segment of American Idol.
Exactly.
But no, the truth is, you know, the very worst case scenario is that someone's brought a sort of boring idea. And then all we do is we sit down together and sort of brainstorm how we could make it unique and how we could make it different and special and, you know, something that really stands out. And again, back to the way the festival structured for on the consumer end, you know, since people are really cherry picking what events they want to go to, it's kind of a motivating force on the side of the people who are producing the events to come up with the coolest, most interesting, you know, biggest bang for your buck. Because, I mean, in total, there are going to be, I don't know, 80, 90 events happening over the course of the 4.5 days. Not everyone can go to everything. So, I think, you know, spirit of friendly competition, it's only going to yield great results.
Yeah, Francis and I decided to serve foie gras with our cocktails.
We knew that'd get some
people out.
It's how I get people to come to meetings. I always serve food. Serve food and cocktails. Now,
totally.
Now, of course, our seminar is your favorite idea of all. I'm sure. I didn't even have to ask that. But aside from our idea, what do you think are some of the most interesting seminars or surprising seminars that are going to be offered at Manhattan Cocktail Classic?
We have one seminar called The Spirited Way, W-H-E-Y, which is about spirits that have been basically monastic spirits and cheese. Benedictine and chartreuse and you know, all the spirits that are produced by monks paired with cheeses, which is pretty out there and I think pretty special. That's one of the wackier ones that I'm pretty excited about.
Monks don't have a lot to do except for really drink
spirits
and make spirits and beer and cheese.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's an off-site event that's still in the formulating stages, but that's focusing basically on modern cocktails and modern cuisine that. I hope it comes together because it sounds really special.
You mean like modern, what do they call that?
Molecular gastronomy.
Molecular mixology. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, we'll see. Again, I can't tip my hat on them all yet. And that's one other thing. So you know, tickets have just gone up. But that's not the extent of it. There are going to be more events added to the calendar. Up through the next month. So you should definitely. Keep checking back.
Well, you can find tickets. You can find the link on our website at restaurantguysradio.com or go right to ManhattanCocktailClassic.com. Tickets are on sale now. They're going to sell out fast, I believe. We'd love to see you at our seminar, but you should check out all the seminars while they're there. If you're coming in from out of town, you can find hotel accommodations. And it's really exciting that this is coming to New York. Great work, and kudos to you, Leslie.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, Leslie, we'll see lots of you next month.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, we'll be seeing each other quite a bit.
Well, we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't, based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Manhattan Cocktail Classic. I'm impressed. I'm excited. How about you?
I'm very excited. Francis and I talk a lot about cocktails, obviously, on the show. It's really been a big part of our show, and part of it is because Francis and I were bartenders for a long time before we owned our own restaurant, but also because this cocktail craze is kind of seeping into everything that is restaurants, into kind of mainstream restaurants, and Francis and I talked a little bit earlier before about the food at these cocktail bars. But what you see is this, it's growing. It's growing into all these different facets. But one of the reasons that I think it's growing is because, you know, we had the famous chef craze, okay? And that's
right.
still going on, obviously, to some extent. But when you start having the famous bartender craze, when you start having the cocktail craze, the cocktailian craze, what you have that you don't have with the chef craze is you have accessibility to the people who are creating. You have accessibility to those people are right across the bar from you. Whether they're the bar owner or the bartender, they're right there. They're in front of you. You get to talk to them about this, and you can fuel that a little bit. And I think that's part of what's been fueling this is how much accessibility you have to these people. You know, if you go to PDT, 9 times out of 10, Jim Meehan's going to be there, and you're going to have a chance to talk to him. Or at the very least, you're going to talk to the person creating the cocktail that you're drinking. When you have a chef, you don't really have that same kind of accessibility. They're behind the door. They're in a closed room, or even in an open kitchen. You can see them, but you certainly can't talk to them.
You know, it's interesting. That is furthered by some places like Milk and Honey, which is downtown, kind of one of the early cocktail places in New York that was a serious cocktail place. No cocktail menu. No cocktail menu. And why is that? Well, it's because they want to have a conversation with you about what you're going to drink, and they'll make you drink. May sound like a pain in the butt, right? But it's about having a conversation. And if Alex Day is behind the bar, he's going to make your drink. If Sasha Petrasky is behind the bar, he's going to say, you know, I'd like a drink. What would you like? You know, it's not about what do you have, but what you like as well. Do you feel like a whiskey drink? Do you feel like a rye or a bourbon? And I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. And it also, it's a very social thing. I mean, you go to a restaurant and you sit down at a table with the people that you came with, and you stay there for 2 hours, 3 hours, and you have dinner. You go to a bar, and if you sit at a bar, you have a conversation with maybe the people next to you, certainly with the bartender, and the commitment is much less. If you want to go and try Alain Ducasse's food, set 4 hours aside, set a lot of money aside, set an evening aside for that, and that's the main focus of the evening. If you want to stop in to the Pegu Club for a drink, maybe one, maybe three, maybe five.
Right. If you have 22 minutes, you can basically accomplish that goal.
Yeah. And I think that's really appealing. I think that's a lot of what bar culture is all about, what cocktail culture is all about. And
but I also think that's part of the appeal of the cocktail seminars, the cocktail classics, because now there's even more accessibility to those people, to the to the people who are what we'll call them the celebrities of the business. You know, if Audrey Saunders is going to be there, she's going to be in a room with 40, 50, 60 people.
Well, and let me interject for just a moment. I think you bring up a good point. I mean, a lot of these folks are the celebrities in the business. Yes, they have a certain amount of celebrity and status. But one of the things that I find most compelling about talking to folks like this is you and I have been making cocktails since 92, right? In New Jersey.
We're making real cocktails. I was making Alabama Slammers in 1986.
Real cocktails. Basically, since we met Dale, we got religion about cocktails. But Dale DeGroff, Audrey Saunders, Jim Meehan, Julie Reiner, Sasha Petrasky, these are folks that actually changed the way America drinks cocktails. These people aren't just celebrities because they're famous and everybody knows them. They're famous and everybody knows them because they're at the dawn of a movement of resurgence in American cocktails that's gone around the country and around the world. You know, these are people that actually made a difference. They changed the way that American bars and restaurants work. And to talk to them is really fascinating and interesting. So listen, we hope that you come to our seminar. We hope you check out the Manhattan Cocktail Classic in general. If you're flying in from out of town, coming from Chicago, Los Angeles, Boston, Canada, we have a bunch of listeners out there. It's a great time to come and see us. You can stay in New Brunswick, have dinner at one of our restaurants if you like, or just meet us in Manhattan. We'll be in both places all weekend long. If you want to sign up for our seminar, you can get a discount when you go to the Manhattan Cocktail Classic website. If you type in the promo code RESTAURANTGUYS, you'll get a 10% discount on our seminar. And we hope to see you there.
It's going to be big fun.
Well, we hope you've enjoyed this hour as much as we have. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and on RestaurantGuysRadio.com.